First of all, it's just, I want to begin by saying it's so nice to be back and to be with all of you and to get to meet some of you guys. You know, like last night, I could barely sleep. I was so excited to be back here. I was supposed to come back 2 weeks ago, but I had a wedding that I got quarantined because of, not just because it was out of state, not because I was exposed. So it's really nice to be back to everyone. And with everyone, I look forward to meeting all of you and getting to know you. So as I said at the beginning of the last Chazar Hashir, the purpose of Chazar Hashir is really to just get a sort of a structure of the sugya, to get kind of the main mahalach down. It's not to be an exhaustive review of all the shitot and all the different issues of Rosenzweig discussed. It's really supposed to be, you know, kind of just trying to provide a structure. And this year we discuss a lot of different issues. Sometimes we spend a great deal of time like reading a specific source and kind of delving into it. And it's kind of hard to get the big picture. So what we try to do here is try to provide, you know, what's the big picture? What's kind of the main idea we're trying to get across in the sugya? And the shito sheet and, you know, reviewing notes is helpful for just getting down all the opinions and issues, but our goal here is not necessarily to do that. I think in general, I like to frame a Rosenzweig sugyo in a couple of different ways. And there are really two different types of sugyo. The first type of sugyo is a mahalach sugyo. And I think we've had some of those already this year. Clearly, you know, of course, since it's a Rosenzweig, we'll discuss a plethora of options, but really a Rosenzweig has a clearly preferred mahalas on the sugya. But sometimes you also have another type of sugya, which is what I call multi-systemic sugya. Basically, that you have these different conceptual options, these different mahalasim, and instead of trying to kind of develop one, you know, let's say like, oh, what's the nature of the Isser Chametz, but instead of trying to just develop one, he's trying to do is kind of explore with you all these different range of options. And for that type of sugya, sometimes it's actually a little harder because you have to, you don't want to forget the forest for the trees. So again, you kind of have to zoom out and understand what we're trying to accomplish. But I'd say this sugya is really a multi-systemic sugya. It wasn't necessarily like a preferred mahala, so it was really just kind of, you know, the range of options within the sugya. The Bechina is going to be this coming Wednesday. You know, you can speak to anybody who took it last year. Basically, it's some Shito questions, like, you know, what does this person say about this, you know? And then some sort of Mahalath questions, kind of what we do in Chazar Hashir, like, what, you know, let's ask, you know, what's the Rambam Shita about this Sugya? So just kind of have both try to get down the Shito, the main Shito, what's important, and then for each Sugya to just have, you know, what's the main Mahalath in each Sugya? All right, now let's actually begin. So the part of what we try to do in Chazar Hashir is try to frame the issue, as I've said. And I think for each sugya, I like to provide a framing question, which you can kind of now build the sugya around. For this sugya, I think the framing question was, is bedikas chametz a viable way to prevent the violation of Bal Yirah or Bal Yimatzeh on Pesach? Is it a valid mechanism for doing so? So in order to address this topic, we need to break down this Chazar Hashir into, let's say, five sections. The first is, let's provide a little background to the topic of bedikas chametz. The second is, what are some conceptual options or really reasons for the basis of bedikas chametz? The third section is trying to not just leave these up in the air, but to really try to pin down these options into specific sources. The fourth will be a few nafka minot. We're not going to try to fit everything. We'll do a few nafka minot just to highlight these different approaches. And the fifth section will do the Rambam. They don't have a Rambam by chance? Everyone has a computer. We'll be fine. Okay. So everyone can hear me? Binyamin, we're good?
Great.
So let's begin with the background for this idea. So when we evaluate the obligation of bedikas chametz, we're confronted with a certain tension. On the one hand, we know bedikas chametz is a significant ceremony, you know, both experientially and halachically, and we're mandated to make a bracha on it. And, you know, the opening mishnah of our masechet is dedicated to addressing the details of bedikas chametz. Perhaps most shockingly, the Yerushalmi says that the pasuk, which seems to be talking about, you know, shmiras hamatzos, is actually a reference to bedikas chametz. And or that, you know, from the day and night of Yadalit should be Mishumari. And we also learn about bedikas chametz, forgetting the specific drasha out there. The idea in the Rishami is that Bedikah is actually a Daraisa. Because Chametz is a Daraisa, drasha from Sukkim. That's on the one hand. And on the other hand, the Gemara in Pesachim, as we know, seems to diminish its significance by stating that Amar Yehuda Amarav, Habodik Sar Sheyavata. Bedikah is not good enough on its own. You need to have Bittul as well. Furthermore, the Gemara in Pesachim states, given the Bedikah's Chametz Midarabananhu, again, the specific details aren't so important. The important thing here for us is that the Gemara refers to Bedikas Chametz as Derabanan. Even the Bedikas Chametz means Derabanan. Because all you really need is Bittul. Bedikas Chametz is only Derabanan. So we have this kind of conflict, right? this tension here. What we asked and what we want to try to determine during this year is what is the relationship between Bedikas Chametz and Bal Yira and Bal Yimatze? Is it an effective mechanism for fending off a severe prohibition on Pesach? Good? All right, awesome. So that's the first section. The second section is the different conceptual options. So first of all, we can begin by just breaking it down into two broad categories. The first is no, it's not effective. And the second is yes, it is effective. For no, let's say, you know, we'll get into exactly who says what later. But the first approach would be that it's not effective at all. It's Bedikas Chametz is the only Derabanan institution. That's it. Or yes, that's effective on a Midaraisa. So let's present here, but within that, obviously, there are more nuanced opinions. So the first opinion, which we'll say, is that it's not an effective mechanism. Bedikah has nothing to do with Bal Yira, Bal Yimatze, and there's no Kiyum D'Oraisa. Likely what this indicates is that Bedikah was just instituted for some secondary pragmatic purpose, not but for Bal Yira, Bal Yimatze. That's the first option. The second broader camp, and we're going to say in total, we're going to have four options here, is that it is an effective mechanism. Now, why might this be? So the first approach is that within this, right, or let's say the second approach, we'll just make it 1, 2, 3, 4, is that it's from the dinim of ones umisasik. Right? Once I have searched, I've done all that I've needed to do, and I'm capable of doing. Right? You sort of, by searching, you've triggered that threshold, I think, of Rosenzweig said. You've hit that point where you're good to go because you made that effort. And that's all that halacha, the Ribono Shel Olam, could possibly require from you, is to do this level of search. So within the context of ones umisasik. The third option here is that it's a din internal to Bal Yira, Bal Yimatze. So we could say, basically what this means is that by searching for the chametz in order to destroy it, you're basically making clear that you don't want to have a relationship with the chametz anymore. So even if you don't find chametz per se, but you've defined through your actions that you're not interested in chametz, right? You're not interested in it being in your domain any longer. Now, the reason why that might be helpful is because maybe the ownership of chametz is sort of a lesser ownership than in other contexts, or the requirements by chametz are lesser. We'll say here the reason why is because maybe chametz is less about how much you have it, but it's really about showing that you're disinterested in the source of the isa. Chametz is so terrible. I'm showing I'm distancing myself from it. That's the third potential approach to Bedikas Chametz. The effectiveness of Bedikas Chametz. Finally, it could be, and by the way, just in terms of the assumptions we made in the sugya, so we made certain assumptions about Tashbisu and Bittul. We'll explore the sugya more at length, but for now, let's assume Tashbisu has an intimate relationship with Bal Yira, Bal Yimatze. Whether more fundamentally or just practically, but there's an intimate relationship that Tashbisu precludes Bal Yira, Bal Yimatze. So we could say that why is Bedikah effective? Because it's a fulfillment of Tashbisu Sorami Batechem. Now this could manifest itself in two different ways. It can manifest itself by actually fulfilling tashbisu, or that it removes the need for tashbisu. It kind of stands in place of tashbisu. Okay, and we'll get into this later. We'll pin these down. Okay, good. Crane, we're good? Awesome. Now to transition to the third section here, which is pinning down these conceptual possibilities into some actual shito and to address some issues. So for the first approach, that it's midarabanan and it's for a secondary purpose, right, it's not for bali rabbi, bali matzai. So who's the main shita here? Tosfot, exactly. Right. Tosfot will say that the reason why you have bedikas chametz is shelo yavo la'achla. Why the chamim instituted? Bitul ba'al masagi, it's great, you know, you're good. Why do I need any more? Because we have this other concern, not bali rabbi, bali matzai, but you know, you're going to end up eating the chametz on Pesach, get a chiyuv kari, so therefore the chachamim were extra machmir there. A second possibility for this midarabanan idea is found in Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, who quotes Rabbeinu Yechiel. So Rabbeinu Yechiel says, this is Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, Beta Manal. By the way, if there's ever a source which I didn't give the where it's found, you can just ask me. I'm happy to point it out. So Rabbeinu Yechiel's fascinating comment in Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, Beis Amud Aleph, says that why do I need to do it? He says, meaning bittul is such a insignificant action in terms of how much physically I need to do. So sometimes, since it's, you know, it's all kind of off the radar, it's not something, oh, I need a dedicated huge amount of time on my schedule for, I'm going to forget all about bittul. And therefore, the Chachamim required you to do bedika. Why? The isba tircha. Because there's tircha. So once I have to do bedika, I'm surely not going to forget bittul. It says, mitocha, he has zakho lasos bittul doraisa, velo yavo rebayira. Is that a shofar guy, by the way? He used to be this guy that like blew shofar every day. Is he? What? Oh, yeah. So that's a second option, right? Which is, it's also within this approach that bittul is a, you guys are missing out on Zoom. We're being Mekayim shofar like 2 months later. basically, it doesn't solve, for Rabbeinu Yechiel, it doesn't solve the problem. But you might say it's just a technical reminder and it's sort of a security that you're going to do bittul, okay? So that's the, let's say, two different ways to approach this first option, that it's not effective for Bali Rabbi Matzei. That's the first approach. The second approach is one of ones, right? So I just want to point out that the notion of ones misasek by the Digas Chametz can kind of go in three directions. We're going to go in the middle one. On the one hand, you could say, so the Gemara talks about how chametz is one of the two things that's not in your rishus, and the Torah says the Torah puts it into your rishus. Right? There's two things. The other one's bor rishus or avos. So the question is, So the question is, what are the implications of that? So you could say that since the chachamim are the ones who put it in your rishus, really you shouldn't own it. But they're the ones who put it in your rishus. So therefore, it's not that big of a deal. I don't really own it. It's just this chachamim put it into your rishus. So if that's the case, right, then maybe I could say it's so kal that I don't even need bedika. Right? I don't need anything. Right? Just, you know, as long as I don't find anything, I'm good. So that could be. That's one extreme. That's not the approach we're going to take. The other extreme would be
Abraham.
Yeah.
Is that an approach in Bedika, or that's the general approach in Ones HaMisasik about Chametz?
Ones HaMisasik about Chametz. I'm just laying out how Ones HaMisasik could impact Chametz.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, we're going to take the middle option, okay? I'm starting from the extremes. The other extreme is that maybe because it's not like, maybe because it wasn't naturally, organically, that's a good word, organically in your rishus, and now we put it into your rishus, that's going to make it extremely high standards, right? More so than usual. So maybe Bedika wouldn't work because, Onus Misasik wouldn't be relevant here because the standards are just too high. Good? We're good? Are you late to Svi, by the way? Oh, nice. Okay. You know, my brother-in-law is Daniel Aharon.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think they're friends from what I understand. They're roommates. Okay. So that's kind of the two extremes. Well, the approach that we're going to take here is that basically Bedikas Chametz reaches the threshold of Ones Umisase. Basically, once I've done Bedikas Chametz, I have fulfilled my my obligations vis-a-vis the Ribono Shel Olam. I've done what I needed to do. I tried. I've searched. I'm good to go. So that's how Bedikas Chametz would help with Balei Rabbi Matzai. Now, who's the main shita for this approach? So it's quite clearly the Sefer HaMechtam. Sefer HaMechtam has a couple of comments here, but the one that I'm referring to more specifically is the Sefer HaMechtam on Vav Amud Beis, where he says there's anos and chametz in yadua. Let's see if I have it. Oh, do I have it here? Yeah. Shem Yishar HaChametz Beito Shalei Yadabo V'lo Matzo Im HaBedika V'kivin Shalei Yivato Yavor Alav. Halesa, Dechia, Gavna, Vadai, Onesu, Barachmana Patre. Onesu, Barachmana Patre, Sefer HaMechtam explicitly invokes this principle. Okay. That's the Sefer HaMechtam. But now we got into a bigger issue, which is that if you invoke Onesu, Misasa,
The Mechtam was talking about after Bedika?
What?
The Mechtam was talking about after Bedika that there's a third?
Yeah. Yeah, so he's talking about if you find chametz in your house that you didn't find with the bedika, right? So it's clear chametz in yadua after that you didn't. Okay, so that's what we want to pin down into a shita. That's a good shita to pin it down into. But we have to kind of discuss a sort of a broader issue in onus and misasik, and specifically with misasik, which is. Is there still considered to be a Maisa Aveira? Okay, vis-a-vis any chiyuvim in terms of, chatas or something. We know you're pater. But did I still do something wrong? Is there still some Maisa Aveira, on my personality? So here we get into a debate between... Okay, so first of all, just generally speaking, right, we know that... let's say by the big three, right? So there's a debate about whether, you're pater, if you violate that from tur onus. So that's an important debate. The Rambam, Ibn David, the Urayim. But I think the idea there is, or Rosenstein, the point he was making by referencing that, was that you might not be totally off the hook, right? In terms of any obligations, yeah, but in terms of, your spiritual state, you're not completely off the hook. These mechanisms don't completely absolve you of any guilt or the tarnishment of sin. And so if that's the case, then to try to use that as a mechanism for getting around Bali Rav, Bali Matzah is going to obviously be very problematic because it's not really effective if you still have some Avera on the books. So let's talk about now, so more specifically, right, what about Bedikas Chametz? So we have a debate between Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Nesivos and the Kor Chaim. So what's the... First of all, Rabbi Akiva Eger is a famous shita, especially because of his approach to Masechta Machshavos on Shabbos. But let's just say, so Rabbi Akiva Eger holds that in general, misasik is not that you haven't violated the avera. It's not counted as violating an avera. It's just that you're Torah korban, but there's still guilt. There's still it's on your spiritual slate. It's not that it completely removes you from the Savera. By Shabbos, it's different, because by Shabbos is a requirement of Melechas Machshavos, and so therefore, maybe Misasik is, or he says Misasik is not a problem there for that reason. But that's Rabbi Akiva Eger's shita. That Misasik is just a patur, but it doesn't mean you're not actually, you haven't actually violated it. So if that's the case, then Bedikas Chametz, that's not helpful to us then. It doesn't work. Anybody remember the Mekor Chaim Shita? Brooks, you were in the Shita.
Yeah, well, he assumes that Misasek is a Hakras and Maisa.
then says that misasik doesn't apply. If you don't violate the avir by doing maisa, then misasik, the term misasik doesn't apply.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's more willing to open up this possibility that, you know, there are certain averos which it would be totally pater from. And that's an important thing of Makor Chayim. So they talk about, you know, how he addresses specifically B'dikas Chametz is important too. But the idea I'm trying to tease out here is that if you think Misasek and, you know, Ones can get you totally off the books, and that's helpful here in terms of B'dikas Chametz. It's an effective mechanism for Bari Avali Matze, because if you do that, you're clean. But if you hold that, you know, like Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and say that no, you still violate the avira, then this notion of ones is not, and misasik is not going to help you very much. Yeah.
Remind
me your name, Stephen. Okay.
Did we not necessarily make any distinction between ones and misasik, or
I don't think we. Someone's not muted here. Yeah. Do we talk about ones and misasik? I mean, clearly there are different standards halachically.
Yeah, is it which one we're
going to
be using?
He kind of addressed both. I'm not sure if he... Josh, what do you think?
I think Rabbi said he was going to group them together.
Yeah, I think you're right. He talked about just kind of both together. Obviously, like, there are more nuanced, you know, differences. But yeah, remember, I was in my first year of Shir in Ksubos, we did like the sugya of Ones, like different, like, each year, right? So, you know, I think he has somewhat, you know, some stuff to say about that. My first year in Shir, so don't ask me, you know, what he said necessarily, but okay. That's the second approach, that of Ones Umisasing. The third thing is, the third approach is that it's sort of internal to Bali Raya Bali Matze. So it happens to be, I was looking last night at Shirim of Aaron Lichtenstein's Tzadik Gebracha, so he actually had, he formulated this perspective pretty well. Which I won't take advantage of now, but just worthwhile to look at, because he also has this approach, and he actually quotes a number of sources for it as well. So here we want to talk about it in terms of being an internal Bali Ra Bali Matze issue, and that's why B'dikas Chametz here would be valid. We'll start with the Rambam. This is within the third or four models here. This is the model that's internal Bali Ra Bali Matze issue, and that's why B'dika is considered to be effective here, right? What justifies B'dika as an effective mechanism? It's our understanding of Bali Ra Bali Matze and Chametz. So here what I want to point out, the Rambam's, you know, had to Latachmo, we had to Ashen Bomaisa, which are ones I did discuss. But I just want to, for our purposes, I just want to highlight one thing in the Rambam. So the Rambam thinks that, and this is going to be the Rambam, Parak Aleph, Halacha Beis, Halacha Gimel. Right? So there's some evidence that the Rambam believes that the violation of eating chametz is sort of an active one, or having chametz is an active one. Having chametz. So he says, so first of all, the Rambam integrates the Isser Hanav, chametz together, the prohibition of Bali Raya. But here the important thing is that the Rambam says, when he's talking about owning chametz, and this is the key thing. So he says, v'hamin niach, so he conjoins it with Isra Anav, but he says, v'hamin niach chametz b'rishuso. So one who leaves chametz under his possession, right? It's not someone who has chametz in his possession, it's you left chametz in your possession. It was me niach. So and then the Rambam says that you don't have makos because it's lashim b'maisa. But he says, unless you create or buy chametz during Pesach. So it's the notion that you could do an action here, right, is important. And then it gets to the top one. I don't want to get into that so much. But basically, the point we're trying to make it very clear, is that by keeping chametz in your possession on Pesach, you're making a statement. It's not just a passive event. But you're expressing something about your approach to chametz. So when you don't do tashbisu of chametz on Pesach, then you're being meniach of chametz. You're doing an action, right? You're showing a certain orientation or perspective on chametz. And if that's the case, which is all I'm trying to derive from the Rambam here, so if that's the case, and it's really about your orientation, then maybe what could be helpful for us is that if we do something to reflect that our orientation is not that we want to keep the chametz, not that we want to be meniach. On the contrary, we want to get rid of the chametz, that's what makes Bedikas Chametz an effective mechanism. Because Bedikas Chametz is reflecting, obviously you're also getting rid of the Chametz, but you're reflecting a certain perspective on Chametz that you're not interested in it. And so once we understand Balei Bali Matzeh and what we're worried about with Chametz, and then we understand, it's really about its orientation. Really, it's, you know, Hameniach if you don't do it. So by making a statement, a strong statement, on the contrary, on the other side, that's very telling, that's very important, and that's why Bedika can be an effective mechanism for removing Balei Bali Matzeh. Now, I wanted to point out...
Just to clarify, we didn't want to say this was the Shita Sarambam per se.
No. I'm not trying to say this is the Shita Sarambam. I'm saying this is a source, right, that reflects the idea that Balei Matzeh is really about, you know, an orientation. And then once we can understand that about Balei Raya, Balei Matzeh, then we can extract that idea and then how could this impact the Dikas Chametz? So I'm not trying to say the Rambam necessarily fits into this thing. The Rambam reflects a certain character of Balei Matzeh, and through understanding that, we can understand Bedika better and what Bedika is trying to accomplish. Yes, sir. What do you think?
Yeah, I was just asking to clarify that point. Okay. That was what I assumed as well.
Okay, awesome. Sakha, I miss you in Chazara Shir, man. I'm calling you all the time. All right. Fine. This is, I thought another idea here, and I don't think everyone's going to put it this way in Shia, but I think it's actually could fit nicely, is that we mentioned at the very end of Orchos Chaim, and he's quoting his Rav Aaron Zal. So he says, right, that Bedikas Chametz midoraisa. Where does he derive it from? So he derives it from the psukim of Balei Bali Matzeh, right, if I remember correctly. Here's what he says. Says, what's the point here? We learn out from Balei Matzeh Bedika. So you can't pin down within this short sentence, this is his perspective about Balei Matzeh, you know, and that, but my point is that for the Orchos Chaim, it would make this second perspective, or really third perspective, sorry. This third perspective here makes a lot of sense, right? Because it's really internal to Balei Raya, Balei Matzeh, and that's why it makes total sense to derive the Dikas Chametz from Balei Raya, Balei Matzeh Psukim. That's my suggestion. The fourth approach, and this is probably the most rich, was the approach of that it's a fulfillment of Tashbisu. So, but again, we mentioned that this can kind of manifest itself in two different ways. The first way is that it doesn't necessarily fulfill Tashbisu, but it precludes the need for Tashbisu. It's a stand-in, in a sense, for Tashbisu. The second is that you're really fulfilling Tashbisu. So why am I saying that first option? Who's the one that kind of we tried to work on? Maybe it's, you know, obviates the need for Tashbisu. Who's the main shita for that approach? Yeah, the Ran, right? So the Ran goes back and forth like four times about all this stuff. But what he says at one point, at least, is that the Ran's idea in a number of places is that the Ran thinks like Bedika and Bior are the same, right? He like conflates them. He derives proofs from it from a Gemara, which is clearly talking about Bior Chametz. So he thinks, and the Ran thinks, both are valid min haTorah, right? Yeah.
Does it mean the same, or does it mean that Bedika leads to Bior?
I'm saying, right, the fact that, I'm not sure exactly how to precisely say it, but clearly he thinks there's some, it leads to the other. That's a good, maybe we could say that. But the point is that he kind of addresses them together. And like one psukim could teach you for the other. And he uses that to say it's Doraisa. But his idea at one point seems to think that the effect of the Bedika is that there's no Chiyuv Tashbisu. The effect of Bedika is that you don't have a Chiyuv Tashbisu. And another point, it sounds like maybe it's more fulfillment of Tashbisu, but that's one way it can manifest. A second way it can manifest is that it's really a fulfillment of the, you know, Chiyuv Doraisa, Tashbisu, Sormi Batecha. Here we can point to several shitos. I think probably the strongest is the Maram Kalava. He says, he has this line if I have it. I already have that line for the Maram Chaleva. Yeah, I'm not sure if I have a line here, but basically his idea is that it's the Iker Kiyam Tashbisu. Right? Bedika is the primary. Right? That he's probably the strongest in this idea. He also has this idea of there's sort of this problem. We'll get to it in Afkaminas, which is like, how do you actually translate Tashbisu? So we'll get into that later. But he thinks that Bittul is like not included at all in Tashbisu, which happens to also be Tosos Shita. He thinks Bedika is really the primary central mechanism. Good. That's a Maram Chaleva. But then it gets a little more complicated with some of the other Shita. A little bit, only a little bit. So another Shita was Rabbeinu David. So Rabbeinu David has this fantastic line. Anybody remember what Rabbeinu David's line is? Exactly, right? He says, the Baruch Shalom doesn't expect for you to be an angel. You're a Ben Adam. So you're not going to find all the chametz in the world. Your job is that you did what you could. But we didn't group this in the onus category, right, which actually on the Shito sheet, I see now, I might have. But we didn't group this in the onus category. Because basically his concern is that maybe I wasn't bodeg yafa yafa. He says, you can't have that concern because the Ibn Shalom says, lo notara ma'afa yasharis. And he clearly, this is in context of Rabbi Yimasei. But we didn't group the Rabbeinu David in that second approach that we've been mentioning. And we put him in the fourth approach because really his the reason why he's talking about, the reason why he's speaking about anos there, right, basically lo notara ma'afa yasharis, is that we're trying to say it's a good fulfillment of Tashbisu. So how could this be a good fulfillment of Tashbisu? It's a Bedika B'Talos. Maybe it's not that valid. You didn't get everything. How could this be a Kiyum of Tashbisu? Sorry about that. So therefore, he invokes this idea of the Torah Malachi Asharis. So it's an onus formulation, but it's not really an onus perspective. I think that was my impression.
Didn't we use the Ran? Didn't the Ran have this line about something on
Zekos? Yeah, he has this other one. The Ran has for chametz, chametz you do it. That was for the past, right? That's I think the Ron's point. Right? So therefore, you don't violate for the past, right? As opposed to Tosfos. As in the Mafreya, right? I think that's it's the Ron Shita there. Am I accurate? I think that's the Ron Shita. Yeah. Okay, but here I'm talking about Rabbeinu David.
Yeah.
So Rabbeinu David here is another, let's say, a third source, right? We had the Ran, which is an interesting take on Tashbisu, at least one perspective in the Ran. We presented the Maram Chaleva, and now we just presented the Rabbeinu David Shita. A fourth opinion I just wanted to relate to here, because I think it's an important one, is the opinion of the Ritva. So the Ritva, Bezam and Aleph, also discusses Bedika and Bittul. So just for the record, I mentioned this before, but I wanted to just clarify it again, which is that the Ran, in his defense of Rashi against Tosfos, says that Bedika and Bittul are basically equal in terms of their effectiveness and their validity as mechanisms to preclude Bali Rana Bali Mate. That's the Ran Shita, which is important. Maybe put that before in your notes with the Ran. But that's the Ran's idea. So we tried to point out that for the it's sort of like a continuum, right? You have the Ran, which is kind of like they're equal. Maram Chaleva is like, which is a real extreme, which is like Bedika is really the be all and end all. And then here in the middle of those three ideas, right, is the Ritva. Okay, and this is another Shita here. So the Ritva doesn't think that Bedika and Bittul are equal. Basically, he thinks that Bedika or Bittul will work, but Bedika is the preferable one. And the reason why is that to really fulfill it, is ideally to do it through Bedika. But if you can you weren't able to, then Vittel, like, will kind of nullify the obligation. It's sort of like for him, it's like a secondary meaning of Tashbisu. Like, that's why they included it in Tashbisu, because it's sort of like a secondary idea. So here you have an approach which is not saying that Bedika is like, you know, Tashbisu is Bedika, not Vittel, like Mar Chalava. You don't have an approach which says, oh, they're kind of equal, like the Ran. You have an approach where Bedika is primary, but he thinks that Vittel is also included in Tashbisu. Okay, good. Just to review here, right, we presented four different options. The first approach was that Ones is the first approach was that it's not an effective mechanism. And what's the purpose of it? So Toso says that the purpose of it is a sort of siago achila. And Rabbi Yechiel said that the purpose of it was because of, so it's sort of a reminder for the less tircha, focused issue of Bittel. That was the first approach. The second thing we talked about, Ones, we mentioned the shita of the Sefer HaMechtam, right? Sefer HaMechtam. We talked about, explicitly invokes the principle of Ones Rachmana Patra, right? We also discussed in that context of, you know, how this relates to, Rabbi Akiva Eiger and the Makor Chaim, and their discussion about, you know, do you have a clean slate through Ones HaMasasek? Brought that up in that context. Then we mentioned the third approach, which was about that's internal to Bar Yerba Imatze. We addressed the Rambam, right? The Rambam says Haminiach. Haminiach is about a certain orientation or perspective. That by doing Bedikas Chametz, it's really to try to challenge that orientation. And by doing so, you prevent Bar Yerba Imatze. And then in the fourth approach, we mentioned, which is about fulfilling Tashbisu. So we mentioned first the Ran who thinks both Bittel and Bedika are good, equal midoraisa. But the Ran seems to think that that's sort of Bedika kind of obviates the need for Tashbisu. Maybe it's not a fulfillment per se, at least in one approach. Then we had the Shita of Marim Chalava. Ikar Kiyam Tashbisu is Bedika. We had the Shita of the Rabbeinu David. Right, who invokes only the Torah, Malachi Asharis, but the purpose of that is not for Ones, but it's to justify why this is effective for being the Kayan Tashbisu. And finally, we had the Ritva, who says that Bedika and Bittel are not equal. Bedika is essential, but Bittel also falls under the category of Tashbisu, but it's sort of like it negates the Chiyuv. It's not necessarily as much of a fulfillment. Now we get into just a few Nachmino.
Avram?
The Maram Chalava was saying that because basically the Ritva thinks that Bedika is primary, but the Maram Chalava, but he doesn't say that that means that Bittel is not included in Tashbisu. In fact, he explicitly says it is included in Tashbisu, but it's like a secondary lesser, you know, it just kind of negates the Chiyuv. Whereas the Maram Chalava doesn't even think that Bittel is included in Tashbisu. Bedika is like the essence of Tashbisu. Yeah, I'm sorry, Eitan.
Is the going back to like the Bar Yerba Imatze point, is the Asana Kos of Kilu Bereshuso, how does that factor into the understanding of Bar Yerba Imatze, or is it just consideration?
Yeah, exactly. So I think Rosenzweig invoked for our third approach, right, by being turned to Bar Yerba Imatze, there also Rosenzweig invoked this idea that it's it put it into your Rishus, right? It put the chametz into your Rishus. The significance of that was maybe if they're just putting it into your Rishus, it's not as really as strong of an ownership. We play by different rules, and what does that mean? We play sort of by different rules a little bit. Maybe it's just about reflecting your orientation, but Bedika is about reflecting your orientation towards it. Good.
So is the Asana Kos of Kilu Bereshuso, is that significant in determining whether Bar Yerba Imatze is more of a Kumba Ase or a Sheva Al Tase?
I just think it opens we suggested that the meaning of that Gemara can go up a bunch of different ways. Right? So I think significance. I think one way is to one way to view it is that is this model, is this idea. So, yeah, I don't think it like has to. Yeah. Okay. Who had a question, Jonathan? Yeah, I mean the Rifa. Let me see if I have the. Let me see Rifa Lashon. Yeah, I mean, just does he say why is it's better? I'm not sure if he says why it's better per se. It's just or that just the Torah.
I think he said that it's all only related to Pashmisa because of the way that the course translates it, but in reality, because of the lack.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. I think. But I think Jonathan's question is sort of. Maybe more fundamentally, like why is that a better way of doing Teshbisu? So he definitely prefers it. You're absolutely right. I'm not sure if he gives a. Yeah.
I don't remember if
the
Rebbe says this, but I think someone says that it's with a Shashapila.
That's the Rebbe who says that? Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So actually, I was going to mention that later on, but that's a good point, right? That the right. So, the question is, well, how exactly you define, touch pieces or mi batechem. So, if it's about kind of not, if it's about like biarti akodesh min habayis to get it out of your house, right, and that's like what you think about, touch pisu and the purpose of it is. So, the pedika clearly is more effective than bittul. Bittul's not getting it out of your house. That's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah, very good. Thank you for that. Yes.
In the same question about the effectiveness of Bittul, did Rabbi David discuss that or not?
Rabbi David also talks about. I think Rabbi David also holds that Bittul is effective, right? If I have the. Have you know offhand? Let's see. No, he also, Bittul's also effective. Yeah. Yeah, he also quotes, Bittul's also effective. Let's take a look there. Okay, so now I want to get into a few nafkamino. There's, we could have put more in, but we'll restrict ourselves to just three for now, primarily just because I want to give you guys time for Chazara. And for Sugi, with some more shear in mind, then I'll spend more time Chazara shear. So proportionately, we'll try to make sure this Chazara shear doesn't go for too long. So I'd just like to present three nafkamino here. And these aren't nafkamino necessarily within the approaches per se, but more just broader nafkamino. So let's talk about now the first nafkamino is what is the purpose of the Vedika? All right, can we say a bodhi sar shit vatel, or we say that why do you still need to? Because basically, if bittul works and you always need to do bittul, what's the purpose of the bedika? Right. Well, so you could still hold bedikas d'oraisa, then have to answer that question, right? Because if you always have to do bittul, and bittul is good d'oraisa, so why do you need bedika at all? You still have to answer that question. So it's a little independent. But here's what I think is a good nafkamina. So. What's the Ran's and Tosos' approach to this? Why do you still need to do Vedika? If it's all Amasagi? Shashafila, right? Siagda Minatora. Simple as that. But the Ran also gives, and so that works very well for, let's say, like the idea that Vedika, either that Vedika can affect Bhagavad-Gita, or at least a Vedika in contemporary purpose, maybe it's just for this Chashash. But the Ran also has another view, which is that bedika accounts for sort of an inadequate or insufficient bittul, right? And so it's sort of it's like a backup in case like that bittul is ineffective. Now, what that implies is that bedika can play the role of sort of the real neutralizer of bayra bayimatzei d'oraisa. So even though it's a backup to bittul, clearly, if you hold like Tosfos in the tzad that it's not an effective mechanism, midoraisa for bayra bayimatzei, you can never say what the Ran holds. How can you say that? But same, so the Ran, and this is actually Shita also, right? But the Ran is clearly this idea that maybe it's not just a Hashash issue of, you know, Siag L'Achila, but it's actually itself a neutralizable. Let's say, right, so that's one Nafkamina. Is that clear? Kiva, is clear?
Yeah.
Good. So then we have another issue, which is just raised, which is how do you translate Tashbisu? This is another Nafkamina. Just to point out, you don't, even if you hold that by Rabbi Matzei, let's say that Bidika is only Darabanan, you don't actually have to hold that Bittul is Tashbisu. How do I know that? Tosos, exactly. That's the opinion of Tosos. So how do you actually translate Tashbisu? And obviously this is going to have implications. So Rashi and Unkelos say that what does Tashbisu mean? Vatlon, right? It means to, you know, to be Vatel Lachamitz. I think Sifri says, you know, Vatel Belipcha. But then there's another approach, which is, I think, you know, maybe it's, I'm trying to think. Yeah, the Ritva also mentions that. I saw that in the Ritva. But the I think here Rabbeinu David rejects the this reading. Here, let me see if I have it here. But I think basically one approach is to basically cast aside this Tevatlan idea. I think maybe Rabbeinu David says that, or the Ritva. I have to look back at it. But another approach is just to kind of say, Tevatlan is it's not really what it means. We have to kind of downplay that. I mean, I think maybe it should be David. Yeah. Right, yeah, so okay, good, yeah, well, I think that's very helpful, because I know the Ritva discusses this issue. So, Ezra Rapat.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ezra points out that, right, the Ritva kind of says that, Tevatlu, it's not really, it doesn't really mean Tevatlu, and it's kind of a secondary thing. Really, it means Bior, Bedika. So as we said, maybe to speak sort of a teicha really means like, biyati akadosh min habayis. So that approach is saying that tashbisu can't really be tevatlon, because tevatlon is not essential, right? Tevatlon is bedika has to be more central there. The most important shita though here is the Maram Chalava, right? Because he says that, you're right that Tashbisu. Brooks is giving me a nod. So, Brooks, throw me in here.
Yeah, it says,
Down
the
Tashbisu,
the Tashbisu,
right, exactly. Like, because Tevatlan is great, but what about, Sor mi Batechem? How do you account for Batechem? Right, so he's saying that really, it's a Vatlum, but really what it means is to get it out. That's great, but it has to mean really getting it out of your house. Right, so you translate this this pasuk differently based off of your orientation towards what's, you say maybe that's circular, but basically your how you view the relationship between Bedikas Chametz and Rabbi Matzei is going to impact your understanding or interpretation of Tashbisu. So if you hold maybe like you don't have to, if you hold that's not an effective mechanism, Bittul is the only thing that's really helpful, right? It doesn't have to be like Tosfos, right? Tosfos doesn't hold, it can't be like Tosfos. But if you hold that perspective, then you're not going to say that it means a Bidika, right? It doesn't mean, it means Bittul. But for the other side, we saw the Ritva, we saw Maram Chalava, you could think that really it's, you would sort of translate or explain the pasuk or interpret it to merely be more about the bias being a button. So that's a second Nafkamina.
Avram?
Yeah.
Hey, sorry. Would you mind just repeating why this is an Nafkamina?
Because based off of your orientation towards Bedikas Chametz, right, and its relationship to Tashbisu, right, how are you going to understand this verse of Tashbisu Sor Mibateichem? What are you going to emphasize within this verse? Are you going to emphasize the Mibateichem part? Emphasize the Tashbisu? Are you going to translate it as Tevatlun? How do you understand Tevatlun? Without getting back into all the Shito, you see how, depending on what you focus on and what you prioritize, there's a Bedika and Bittul. Now you understand Bayer Bali Matzei, I knew this relationship to Bayer Bali Matzei, that's going to impact your understanding of the Psukim. Say also maybe the understanding of Psukim impacts your, but that can kind of go both ways. But clearly you can have preferences with how you understand it.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. My pleasure. The third thing I wanted to mention here in the Snafkamina section is that we have this Gemara on Daladama Beis, which talks about Bittul Ba'al Masagi, because B'digas Midarabana. So the context there is talking about like believing, you know, people don't really naturally have Narabanas. And so they say, oh, it's only Darabana and we can believe these people. But the question is, how do you actually do read that Gemara, right? If you hold that B'dika is not Midarabana. So the simple way to read it is if B'dika is not Darabanan, it's just that B'dika, I think now, you know, so let's take a look at it here. Let my Gemara here, might as well open it up. So it says, it's a dollar on the beach, right? It says, yeah, so here in the middle of Dalet Amud Beis, it says, the Musala do Bara, fine. Kamashal came to B'dikas Kamitsir Ibananhu, the Midoraisi Bittul Ba'al Masagi. So, how do you read this? In its contemporary manifestation, B'dika is Midorabana. But, you know, doesn't mean that in its, you know, previous manifestation or, you know, what its real purpose is, doesn't mean that's not Midoraisa. Right, so that's the, you know, how you read this Gemara. Clearly, you have to figure out a way to read it, right? If you don't want to think it's Darabanan. So the way you read it is the second approach. But then we quoted the Makor Chaim, right? The Makor Chaim says, so then we quoted the Makor Chaim, and with Rosenzweig. As well, which is to kind of read this. Rosenzweig had differences. I'll explain why. But let's just say, like, their idea. I'm going to kind of conflate their ideas together, and I'll explain just the differences. So basically, if you want to read this like Tosfos, though, right? Because maybe this is a more compelling reading, right? Oh, you know, now B'dika is only Darabanan. So you know, if I wanted to read this like Tosfos, what could I say? So Makor Chaim, I believe, basically says that what does it mean? It's not that I'm conceptualizing it a little more, but it's not that B'dika is you know, it's not that, oh, because of we instituted Bittul, you know. No, it's because the fact that Bittul exists and Bittul Ba'al Masagi, then naturally B'dika is, you know, that's just a reflects that B'dika is Darabanan. So the Makor Chaim then tries to like pin this into other opinions in the Gemara, and like, oh, you know, if you hold it Sreifa or not, and Tosafot holds not, you know, only Sreifa. So he gets into like the nitty gritty, and like it's not, Tosafot doesn't hold like that. So I don't want to get too into Makor Chaim, but Rav Rosenzweig basically just made the case without kind of trying to make assumptions about, you know, some of the Makor Chaim's assumptions. Yeah, but my point there is not to, you know, review the whole Makor Chaim. My point more is just to see that you have to figure out how to read the Gemara depending on what your perspective is about the relationship between B'dika and Bala Rabbi Matzei. It's going to impact how you read that Gemara. Okay, that's a third Nafkamina.
Why don't we have to like struggle with that Gemara, for instance? It isn't so clear that it's like,
well,
I don't know why
we
discuss
it. Why? Yeah.
So what are we trying to explain? That Gemara is perfect.
Yeah, why is what? Yeah.
I think Finn McCorfine
was
saying that if there's no bittul, that means that, sorry, the Bedika Darabanan, because of the Bedika Darabanan, meaning only when there's bittul,
the Bedika
Darabanan.
Right.
If there's no
bittul,
some Bedika Darabanan.
Right, exactly. That's what I was trying to say before, which is that, like, maybe this reading actually kind of makes more sense, right? The second reading. Oh, because you have bittul, then Bedika Darabanan. But what does that mean if you don't have bittul? Maybe because there are
Isa. And the Nafkamina, I think, really mentioned was that the woman wouldn't have that among us on Isa itself. You can't do bittul. So Bidika is actually the Isa, is not that among us.
Yeah, very good. So you got everyone understood what you just said?
Yeah.
Yeah, every day.
I mean, you can't do the more times point is if you don't have bittul, that means bidika is del raisa. So on Pesach, I'm not allowed to be bittul because asirana. So therefore, we said on Rana is the only reason woman that amanas is because bidika is derabana. So on Pesach, bidika is del raisa, then woman wouldn't have the amanas on Pesach itself.
Yeah, basically. Depending on when bidika is midaraisa or derabana, bittul wouldn't work on Pesach, so it's possible that a woman wouldn't be able to perform it, because then it's no longer derabana and it becomes deraisa. And that's nafkamina to achieve these approaches for those who are on Zoom. Okay, good. That's our fourth section. Now to finish off here. So I wanted to mention just a comment about the Ran without really going through the Ran more specifically. So the Ran. Basically, if you just like read through the Ran, it's like it's kind of chaotic because he keeps going like giving all these different options, right? So you have like four different impressions there about what the Ran is saying. I think the point of Rosenzweig was trying to make is that like there's a certain common denominator in the Ran Shita, which is that you know it's you have all these different things and all these different potential methodologies, but they're all really trying to address or all really ways of addressing. A certain core issue, a bigger point, which is that what is the relationship with Chametz during Zman HaPesach? And I think what Rosenzweig's argument was, and Rosenzweig does this sometimes, he makes this type of argument from time to time, which is that the fact that he's constantly toying with like different formulations is indicating that like really it's the same idea, but it's just trying to figure out the best way to address it. So it's about your overall relationship with Chametz. So what we should do in Chazar is to like nitpick from the Ran, which I think is fair, but he's saying like the Ran as a whole is this idea. Okay. Section 5b now. That was 5a, 5b. The Rambam, let's finish off with the Rambam, because it's our Kini B'Kodesh. So, does everyone have the Rambam up? Benjamin, you have the Rambam? Actually, people probably can hear you as well.
I can screen share if you want.
Yeah, screen share the Rambam for me for a second.
Yeah, you on Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, right?
Yeah, please. So this is going to be the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz, Perek Beis.
Perek Beis?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're supposed to get in the shir, and Rikolinsky told me that we're going to get like a screen in there, hopefully. So like, you know, now you guys can see the shared screen, but hopefully in the shir, we'll be able to have, everyone can see each other. Great. Okay, so the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah Perek Beis begins by talking about mitzvah statement of the Torah, the Hashkisa Chametz, quoted in Zman Iser, Achil Aso. So then the Rambam in Hilchos Beis discusses what is Tashbisa, right? The Rambam transitions to talking about, what actually is Tashbisa there. So, sorry, so then it's like on my auditory, listen to recordings, and you're kind of like, what are those sounds in the background? Like, what's going on? You know, like, you always try to figure out, like, oh, what setting was the shiur recorded in? Like, who are those people talking? And, like, you know, kind of audience is it? So, like, whoever's listening to the shiur is like, what is happening right now? So the Rambam in Halacha Beza continues by discussing what actually is Tashbisa, right? So, what does he say? Shivata Chametz Belibo. Right, so the Rambam says that what is bittul chametz? So what is tashbisu? It's really bittul chametz, right? And that's Rambam's presentation. Really, the focus of the Rambam is a bittul chametz. But then the Rambam talks about bidikas chametz. The Rambam says to me, "Divrei sofrim lachapis achar chametz machbuos v'chorim levdoko l'shim mikol gevura." Very intense formulation to really go and get rid of it. And then he says, "V'chem and divrei sofrim." So again, the divrei sofrim shebodkin umashbisin nachametz belayla. So then he says, "Bodkin umashbisin." So I actually thought that bodkin umashbisin, like there, it seems to indicate that those are kind of two separate things, bodkin umashbisin. But the Rambam seems to, first of all, the Rambam seems to ascribe a great deal of significance to bedika. How do we know this? What phrase does Rambam use? Midibrei Sofrim, right? As we just mentioned. So Rosenzweig's idea is Midibrei Sofrim in general. I remember a number of years ago, we discussed this in Shir, we had like a whole list of all the cases. Obviously, the Rambam used to be doing so from a lot, but you know, Rav Rosenzweig, his idea is that when the Rambam uses midiray sofrim, it's meant to imply a hierarchy. Like when the Rambam uses midiray sofrim, all the Yossi Kalim and everyone, you know, from the first interpreter of the Rambam to the modern day, tries to figure out what the Rambam means by midiray sofrim. And he uses it like differently in various contexts. Like it seems he has different implications of what midiray sofrim is. It's very hard to figure out what he means. So, you know, so everyone chimes in on this issue. But Rosenzweig thought is that it's not necessarily doesn't mean midar reksa. It doesn't necessarily mean it's midar banan. What it means is there's a certain hierarchy within these mitzvahs. So with, for example, by Kiddushin, and the Rambam says Kiddushin kesef is midar banan, right? So the Rambam, so Rosenzweig thought that there it's not because it's not dar reksa. It really means that the Rambam thought that this was like the, you know, in terms of the hierarchy of ways of doing Kiddushin, really this is like the lowest one in a sense. But on the other hand, sometimes it's ascribing a greater significance than just being a, you know, a derabbanan. So it's a hierarchy point. So here, the Rosenzweig pointed out that certainly for the Rambam, it's the Rambam that there's, you know, extra significance to this mitzvah of bedika. So sometimes what this means is that it's like a kiyum d'oraisa, d'rabbanan, but it's kind of kiyum d'oraisa, like that's what you might d'oraisa sofrim. So I want to spend a moment just kind of try to parse out different ideas here in the Rambam. So first of all, what's its relationship to Tashbisu? So the Kesef Mishnah has this phenomenal girsa, where he integrates bedika into Tashbisu. So there, clearly, you know, the Rambam thinks it's a, if that's the case, right, then the Rambam thinks that bedika is really fulfillment of Tashbisu. And intimately tied up into it, midibrei sofrim. Yeah, just look at the lashon of Kesef Mishnah. It's the first, his first words, or quoting it. He says, "Hishiyasya." So he says, "Ma'hi yesh basasa hash basar zuha amur b'torah hishiyasya chamishay dulam yirshuso." Right. Then, "Mishinu adu yivat lebelibo." He first starts with "Hishiyasya chamishay dulam yirshuso." So that's one approach. So that's like really integrated with Tashbisu. That's what midibrei sofrim. That's why it's significant. Maybe that's why it's gained doraisa. Or is Doraisa even potentially? So that's you know, for the Kesef Mishnah. We said that what else could it be if it's kind of Ke'in Doraisa? So to take a step, maybe actually take a step back, you know, maybe it is sort of a fulfillment Doraisa. How can I possibly say this? So the Kesef Mishnah suggests this, right? What does the Kesef Mishnah invoke? Avodah Zarah, right? It really, it's kind of derives from Avodah Zarah, you know, this Doraisa of Avodah Zarah. Maybe, I think even he has this comment that really, like, it's, you know, that it's Mida Oraisa in a sense. It's like a strong root to Mida Oraisa. So then that we mentioned the Rav, right? The Rav held that the Rambam really holds that Bedika is also Ke'in Doraisa. Actually, bedika is not just like a stam derabana. It's kind of like return to our first thing. Like, it's not like this, you know, bedika. It's, oh, it's derabana bit of amasagi. You know, no. Bedika is a significant entity. So, you know, we said in general, either it's a lower level derabana, kiyum derabana, derabana kiyum derabana. So that's me derabana sofrim can imply all these different things. So, yeah. But then the Rosenzweig quoted the Rav that. I'm not being clear. Let's take a step back. Meaning, we had the Rambam, right? The Rambam said midiray sofrim that clearly ascribes great significance. The Kesef Mishnah says that the Rambam is saying the Rambam in his girsa, maybe it's a fulfillment of Tashbisu. It's integrated with Tashbisu. That's one option. A second option is what the Kesef Mishnah says, right? That it's midaraisa, right? With Avodah Zarah as a precedent. The Rav held that I think based off like the double midiray sofrim, thought that it was like a derabanan ke'in d'oraisa, right? And what was the ke'in d'oraisa? Avodah Zarah. And therefore, right, if you just, even if you look at the lashon of the Rambam there, it's very clear. The Rambam says, well, it's not very clear, but you know, it's good. It's, you know, good parallel. It's a very strong mitzvah lir dofar chareha, achi neva milusam yikol arzenu. It's the Rav thought that it was kind of patterned after Avodah Zarah. That's a Ke'in D'oraisa. Rosenzweig suggested the possibility that maybe the general idea, and this is, I guess, maybe a fourth option here, right? Girsa Kesef Mishnah, idea of Kesef Mishnah, the Rav, and then maybe a fourth option here is that, you know, it's hard to pin down exactly to remember this, but I think the idea is that he thought that the general notion of Bedika is Midoraisa. Bedika is Midoraisa, but the Pratim are Darabanan. The Pratims are like, and that's what Divrei Sofrim is coming to explain. Also just point out that I remember earlier in the year we talked about the Radvaz, right? Manashtana Radvaz. So he also invokes like the Avodah Zarah there. So it's also a very good makor. Okay, Shkoyach. If there are any questions, you could ask me afterwards. But yeah, it's great being back in person together. Mr. Hashem should continue. And yeah, we'll get to, it's great to reconnect and we look forward to getting to know those who I haven't known previously. It's good to see everyone.